This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
Welcome to NHPR's 2016 Conversations with the Candidate series. I'm Laura Kanoy, along with Josh Rogers. We're kicking off our series today with New Hampshire Governor Maggie Hassan, the Democratic nominee for U.S. Senate. We've also invited the incumbent Senator Kelly Ayotte to join us at a future date. This hour, Josh and I will ask Governor Hassan about some of the top issues in this race. We'll also present questions from our listeners, received in advance on social media, and we'll hear from our audience here at NHPR, members of the Young Professionals Networks of Concord, Manchester, and the Lakes Region. We're also streaming on Facebook Live, so welcome everyone, and welcome Governor Hassan.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here. Good morning, everybody.
So everyone here in our studio audience, did you watch the debate last night? Let's see some hands. Wow. Almost every hand goes up. Governor, how about you?
I certainly did.
Well, I want to ask you about a major theme that came up last night repeatedly, and that was trade, with Donald Trump emphatically saying that trade deals have been bad for America. What do you think, Governor Hassan?
Well, first of all, I think what we saw last night in the debate was that Hillary Clinton is experienced, qualified, and has the temperament to be president and commander-in-chief and the vision for a future where everybody who works hard to get ahead can stay ahead. And what we saw from Donald Trump was somebody completely temperamentally unfit to be president and without the experience or judgment to be president. I certainly think that trade done right is really important. As governor, I've worked to revitalize our international trade office and increased funding for trade promotion. But it is really important that whenever we look at a trade deal, we have to look at whether it's going to help New Hampshire manufacturers, create New Hampshire jobs, help our overall economy and protect workers and the environment and have the kind of dispute resolution system that's really fair to all participants. So you have to look at every trade deal on its merits. I oppose the TPP deal, for instance, because I don't think it protects workers well enough. I don't think it promotes American values or protects the environment well enough. And the dispute resolution in that trade deal is really, really weighted towards very large corporations.
I was going to ask you about TPP. At this point, President Obama seems to be the only Democrat supporting the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement. Hillary Clinton has withdrawn her support for it. So if elected, you would stand with Hillary Clinton and not President Obama.
That's absolutely true.
Well, Josh, I want to go to you next. Go ahead.
Sure. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
Much of your pitch to voters is your record leading New Hampshire. And while you point to state budgets and the expansion of Medicaid, there are also challenges. The state's struggling to meet the terms of a mental health settlement you helped broker. The state's child welfare agency failed to protect children who ended up dying, and questions persist about the state's contracting with Dartmouth Hitchcock at New Hampshire Hospital. Is it fair to consider any of these failures of management?
Well, first of all, I'm running for governor because here in New Hampshire, by reaching across the aisle, we've been able to make progress for our people and small businesses. I want to see a future where everybody is working hard and we have a middle class that is growing and thriving. And I think it is absolutely critical that we continue to do the kind of work across party lines that we've done here in New Hampshire, passing two fiscally responsible balanced budgets without a sales or an income tax. We're mounting a strong hands-on response to our heroin and opioid epidemic. We, for the first time in 25 years, froze in-state tuition at our university system and lowered it at our community colleges. So what we see now in New Hampshire is a state that's been named the most business-friendly state in the country by CNBC, with a 3% unemployment rate. More Granite Staters working today in our state than at any time in our state's history. And we've been named the best state in the country now for 3 years in a row. I'll get to that. Based on economic strength, community safety, and quality of life. So we've been able to come together and make some progress. We certainly have challenges that we need to continue to address. From my first day in office, I started focusing on a terribly under-resourced mental health system in New Hampshire. It was something that I heard about on the campaign trail each and every day. People with mental illness are our friends, our neighbors, our coworkers, and we have to have an integrated community-based mental health system. That's why I settled the lawsuit that had been brought against the state, and instead of spending time litigating, really focused on how we could increase resources into that system. Similarly, we worked to pass Medicaid expansion, which for the first time covers behavioral health as well as substance abuse treatment. So those are all things we have been able to put in place. There certainly are challenges whenever you manage a large agency and when a large state government and agencies. But the point of the matter is we are coming together. We are tackling those issues. We are investing resources in them. And it's a really sharp contrast to where we have been. There is certainly more to do on the Dartmouth contract. We have been assured by Dartmouth that they have the resources to staff the contract as required, and we have mechanisms for holding them accountable. In fact, as of November 1st, there will be more staff there than there was before this contract. And we brought in outside experts, an outside agency that's nationally known, to completely review top to bottom our child protective services because, of course, Sadie Willett and Brielle Gage, their deaths were tragedies. They're something that affect all of us. We need to do better by our kids. And that's why I brought in this outside group of experts to do a top-to-bottom review, something that my predecessors haven't done. And we will learn from that. I'm expecting that report by the end of the year. And we will then address the issues that they raise with us so that we can protect all of our children.
When you talk a great deal about bipartisanship, which is understandable given that you've led over, you know, divided government. But your record as a state senator, which is a position more similar to being in the U.S. Senate, shows far less in the way of bipartisanship. So is your embrace of bipartisanship, you know, situational?
I really reject the premise of the question. One of the very first things I did in the New Hampshire State Senate was help broker a bipartisan deal to overturn a very bad health care law that had caused small business health insurance premiums, for instance, to rise significantly. What we've done in New Hampshire is come together, have our disagreements to be sure, but made progress with bipartisan agreements, whether it was Medicaid expansion, whether it's two bipartisan budgets that got large bipartisan votes, or whether it's coming together to do things like freeze tuition at our university system.
I mean, I guess
and
what I'm asking is has your view changed? Because, you know, we could go, I mean, we don't have time to go through all the votes, but, you know how you voted. And, you know, there were some bipartisan votes, certainly, but, you know, by and large, there was less bipartisanship going on in the state Senate when you were there.
Well, you know, I will, you and I can have a detailed discussion about this sometime. But at the end of the day, what I always look for is ways that you can get to yes. And there are many, many, many bills that passed in the New Hampshire State Senate with bipartisan votes. There are also some that did go along party lines. And those are ones that often reflect a real difference in principle or values between the two parties. I'm very proud of the fact that Democrats in the New Hampshire Senate, while I was majority leader, passed marriage equality at a time when most other states hadn't done that. Now, that was a partisan vote, but it was the right vote to do.
But so heading into Washington, should you get there, where obviously, you know, it's a pretty partisan atmosphere in the United States Senate, is it fair to think that your time as governor would inform your approach to navigating a very partisan atmosphere?
Look, what I think elected leaders should do, and where I think you really see a great contrast between New Hampshire and Washington right now, is we should be following the example of the people of our state. People in New Hampshire solve problems in their daily lives all the time, whether it's family, businesses, community. They expect the same of us. And that's what I've done as governor. That's what I also did, with all due respect, in the New Hampshire Senate. And what I'll continue to do, the key here is to engage, to communicate, and then to make sure that you're focusing on getting things done. You'll have your disagreements, to be sure, but you have to keep at it. That's what I've done as governor, and that's what I hope to do in the United States Senate.
We'd like to take a question from our audience now. Members of several New Hampshire Young Professionals networks are here, and we're so happy to have them with us. We've got someone at the microphone, and thanks for being here. Please give us your first name and ask your question.
Thanks, Laura. Hi, Governor Hassan. I'm Sheila. I'm from the Manchester Young Professionals Network.
Hi, Sheila.
So my question is about the CARA bill. As you know, the CARA bill has passed both the House and the Senate and is now law, but there is no appropriation. What will you do as a U.S. senator to ensure states have the resources that they need to support substance use disorder prevention, treatment, and recovery services?
Well, Sheila, thank you for the question. I talk with people on a daily basis whose lives have been touched by our heroin and opioid epidemic, and it's something that we've been working to combat since I first took office, when I focused on funding drug task force teams, when the federal government started reducing funding and cutting funding, to passing our bipartisan Medicaid expansion program, to now securing emergency funding through our legislature for prevention, treatment, and recovery services, for law enforcement, for expanding our drug court programs. All of those reflect the multifaceted approach you have to take. As governor, with the National Governors Association, I worked to put together a compact that 46 governors, both parties, signed, laying out for the federal government what we needed as states to really continue to tackle this program so that we can stem the tide and then reverse it and beat this epidemic. I am the first thing in that compact that 46 of the nation's governors signed was a call on the federal government for emergency funding, because we know we need more resources. We need them immediately. And that's the type of thing that emergency funding in a public health crisis can really help you achieve. And I am glad that the CARA Act reflects bipartisan acknowledgement that there's an epidemic. I am very disappointed that it doesn't have funding. To use Senator Shaheen's phrase, the way the CARA Act has been passed now is like building or making a life preserver with no air in it. And so what I would do in the United States Senate is continue to work with members of both parties to really advocate for and secure that funding. I think one of the things you're seeing right now is a majority in the United States Senate that just says no to common sense things like emergency funding. And I'm very concerned that we need to change the way the Senate is running. You have a majority that stands with special interests at the expense of the people and businesses of New Hampshire.
And Governor Hassan, a quick follow-up. As you know, some of the ads that are being run against you say you were slow to the game on this, that you vetoed the budget that included a lot of money here in the state for addiction recovery. There have been some ads, some controversy around this. But what do you say to those who say, look, you know, you could have jumped in right away. Instead, you vetoed that budget. The budget that ended up passing was pretty much the budget that was debated at first. So I just wonder how you respond to the fact that you were kind of slow here in the state to jump on this.
Well, I think that the whole characterization and the narrative that you just laid out is pretty flawed. So let's go back. At every step of my governorship, I have been working to address both behavioral health and substance misuse issues right out of the gate as governor, proposing funding for our drug task force teams so that we could keep them going, to ongoing advocacy for our Medicaid expansion bill. And I wish that the legislature had passed that Medicaid expansion bill in my very first year in office. They chose not to, but we got it done by continuing to be tenacious and continuing to focus on the behavioral health and substance abuse funding that came with that. I stood up for fiscal responsibility on the budget discussions because, one, the numbers that were presented to me in that budget didn't add up, and I knew that because of that, that budget would undermine future attempts to fund substance abuse. The budget had less funding than I had proposed for substance misuse. At every stage of the way, I have been fighting for substance misuse funding and have had to push very, very hard after we had our budget compromise. And here's a real difference between Washington and what we've been able to do in New Hampshire. We had our budget dispute, but we came together across party lines. We got people to the table, and we got a bipartisan budget compromise that did have some funding. While, by the way, during the budget dispute, we kept government running and we kept funding going. Then, because we still needed more to do on substance misuse funding, I called for a special session. I put together a comprehensive proposal. And the legislature took a long time to get the funding done that I had proposed now about a year ago, but it's out the door. And that's a real difference between Washington and what we see in Washington and what we've been able to do in New Hampshire.
Sheila, thank you so much for raising that important issue. And we received many questions, Governor Hassan, in advance on social media from our listeners. And more than one, I have to tell you, was about money and politics. Here's just a sampling. Here's one. If elected senator, what specifically would you do to try to minimize the corruption caused by money in politics? Here's another one. As senator, what would you do to combat the corrupting influence of money in politics? So let me just ask you, Governor, real quickly. First of all, do you agree with the premise that money necessarily leads to corruption in politics?
Well, here's a real difference between my opponent and me. I have a long record of supporting campaign finance reform. I think it's really important to get dark money out of politics. I think it's really important that people have confidence in their political system. And so I, back in my days in the New Hampshire State Senate, worked for increased disclosure after the Citizens United case was decided. I'm the only Senate candidate in this race who supports the overturning of the Citizens United decision. I also support the Federal Disclose Act, which would bring much more sunlight into our campaign finance process, which my opponent has voted against. My opponent also says that overturning Citizens United would be absurd. That's her words. She supports Citizens United. She supports dark money in politics. She opposes disclosure. That's
so
a real
think-
distinction. And that's, again, a reflection of who she stands with. She stands with special interests who have been funding her campaigns and funding her party at the expense of families and businesses in New Hampshire.
And we've got an invitation out for Senator Ayotte so she can respond to those when she comes in. But this was a big issue among our listeners again. So, Josh, another question on this topic, please.
Sure. Governor, you and Senator were unable to come to terms on a so-called People's Pledge to limit or to try to limit outside money spent in this race. And at last count, outside groups have spent more than $50 million. That's $5 out of every $6 in this race, most of it going to negative ads. Do you have any regrets about not accepting the People's Pledge as presented by Senator Ayotte and to try to keep some of this money at bay?
Well, you know, I proposed to strengthen People's Pledge. I signed it. I sent it back to Senator Ayotte. And apparently kind of the way they do things in Washington is it's my way or the highway. But what really is distinguishing the two of us in this race is that I support campaign finance reform. People should go look at the disclosure bills that are proposed, for instance, by Senator Durbin in the Senate. That's a bill I would support. I also support overturning Citizens United, which my opponent doesn't. We do need to get this money out of politics. And I think at the end of the day, we need to focus on how we can do that. And that's what we should be talking about.
Well, you know, I've talked to many voters on this topic, and you know, more than a few of them suggests that the reality of our political system, that essentially neither you nor Senator Ayotte were terribly sincere in trying to reach agreement. She proposed a People's Pledge after benefiting from outside spending. You proposed, you know, a cap on candidate spending when, in fact, outside spending is probably the bigger problem and you were going to be a big beneficiary. So, you know, what do you say to those folks who say, you know, everybody says these things, but when it comes time to their own election, you know, they don't want to draw the line?
Well, the difference is I have a record of working to pass a disclosure bill in the New Hampshire Senate after Citizens United came in. I'm on the record saying that I would support the Disclose Act, which my opponent has actually voted against. I think outside money in politics is definitely a problem, but so is overall money in politics. And so the pledge I proposed would have not only prevented outside money from coming in, but capped the total amount of money so we could have had a race that was focused on the issues. I'll continue to focus on those issues in this race. The real distinction here is that I've got an opponent who gets millions and millions of dollars in campaign contributions from special interests, and her record really reflects that.
And you know, we have to go to a break, and I apologize. And coming up, we're going to turn our attention to foreign policy. More questions from our live audience here as our Conversations with the Candidate series continues on NHPR. Welcome back to our Conversations with the Candidate series on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy, along with Josh Rogers. Our guest is New Hampshire Governor Maggie Hassan. She's the Democratic nominee for U.S. Senate. We're taking questions from our audience, members of the Young Professionals Networks of Concord, Manchester, and the Lakes region, as well as those submitted in advance on social media. And Josh, let's start off with a question from you.
Sure, Governor. Let's move to foreign policy and specifically U.S. relations with Israel. The U.S. recently offered Israel a $38 billion security package. At the time, President Obama said he would continue to press for a two-state solution regarding Israel and Palestine, quote, despite deeply troubling trends on the ground. He was talking about Israeli settlements. If the president is troubled about the settlements, should he have tied Israeli aid to a promise to end them?
You know, the American and Israeli relationship is an unshakable one. It is based on our shared democratic values, and it is essential that we maintain that relationship and make sure that Israel always maintains its democratic and Jewish character. I support a two-state solution. The United States has to facilitate that two-state solution and has a real role to do that, but that requires ongoing bilateral negotiations. And I think that there shouldn't be pre-existing conditions for Israel. They've got to sit down at the table, have those negotiations one-on-one in a bilateral way. And I don't think outside entities should be trying to enforce terms of the deal before those negotiations have even started.
So no, when you say push or facilitate, but not tie money to.
I think that you have to allow the true meaning of bilateral negotiations is that the two parties sit down and negotiate and have the flexibility and space to do what they need to do in those negotiations. And I think the United States has a role to play, to be sure, but I don't think we should be trying to lay down pre-existing terms before those negotiations even start.
I want to ask you another foreign policy question, Governor Hassan. The refugee crisis resulting from the Syrian war. Your campaign website describes the U.S. as a welcoming nation of immigrants, yet many refugee advocates found fault with your decision last November to call for a temporary halt on refugees from Syria. Here's what you said at the time.
What I'm calling for is a pause because the first job of every government is to keep its people safe. That includes immigrants and refugees who are here. And if we don't have safety, we cannot have a free society. And that ultimately is what allows us to stand for the values that we all hold so dear.
Now, since then, as you know, the situation in Syria has become only more dire. And now refugees from Syria are coming into this country. Given your concerns, given your druthers, Governor Hassan, should that be happening?
After Paris, I thought it was very appropriate, in light of concerns raised by the FBI and the CIA, that we take a temporary pause in bringing in refugees, because the FBI and CIA directors had expressed concerns that the vetting program was under-resourced and not working the way it was supposed to. I thought that was appropriate then. I wish that the administration had taken us up on that and really looked at the concerns raised by our national security and homeland security experts about the vetting program. Since that time, I have been focused on making sure that we're doing everything in New Hampshire from a homeland security point of view to make sure that we continue to be safe. We've done everything from put more troopers on the road to increase active shooter trainings and school safety plans. But we also need, as a country, to continue looking at all of the entryways into the United States and making sure that we are adjusting and strengthening those vetting systems and those entryways in light of an evolving threat.
Well, and experts that we've talked to say serious security holes do exist, but not with refugees, with tourism visas, with student visas. For refugees, they say, you know, the vetting process is long, extensive. It takes at least a year, often two, sometimes three. How do you feel about that criticism, Governor Hassan, that fears about refugees are misplaced, that those are the last people we should really be looking at as harmful?
I think when you listen to the FBI and CIA directors, and also we know that ISIS has targeted the refugee system, it's appropriate to take a temporary pause and make sure it is safe. That's what you do to maintain safety and to make sure things are working. Now, it's also really important that we not demonize any single group or entity, and that we continue to be the welcoming country that we always have been. But the two are not mutually exclusive. We can be strong and we can be safe and welcoming. But it is important when critical national security leaders like the head of the FBI and the head of the CIA say, hey, the vetting system as described on paper isn't working the way it's supposed to and is under-resourced. We can't do our job. I think at that point, it is really appropriate to take a temporary pause and do what we need to do to adjust and address the issues that they're raising. I'm very disappointed that almost a year after the Paris attacks now, Washington still hasn't done anything to truly address this issue.
So
and think about what might have happened. I think a temporary pause that could have addressed those issues would have been a good thing, and I think it still would be a good thing to do. Temporary. We have a big humanitarian crisis for sure, and the United States has always played a role in addressing humanitarian crises. But what concerns me is that everybody in Washington reverted to their corners here, and we still haven't addressed those issues. And that's something we could have done if we hadn't gotten into a partisan back and forth about this.
What does that mean, reverted to their corners?
Well, what that means is that one side said we shouldn't bring in any refugees, and the other side said we should keep the system exactly as it is. And I think there are legitimate safety and security concerns that were raised, and they can be addressed. And I also think we have to continue to be the welcoming, inclusive nation that we've always been that strengthened us.
Let's take another question from our audience. Again, members from several New Hampshire Young Professionals Networks are here. Our next questioner, thank you for turning out, and please give us your first name and ask your question.
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
My name's Mike, and I live in Manchester, and I'm with the Manchester Young Professionals Network. My question is about child care costs here in the state. Here in New Hampshire, families are spending more money per month on child care than they are on rent. As Senator, what will you do to make child care costs more affordable and more accessible?
Mike, thank you for the question. And I agree, child care costs are going up and becoming one of the critical expenses and often can be a real barrier to the workplace. And at a time when we have people who want to work and employers who need employees with a low unemployment rate, it continues to be a critical issue. I've laid out an economic plan. It's called Innovate 2.0, following up on the economic plan that I started as governor in 2013. And among the things that that plan calls for is expanding opportunity for hardworking families. One of the things we could do is invest more in early childhood education and child care, working to lower the costs for families. We can offset the cost of that by closing some of the unnecessary tax loopholes that we can't afford. For instance, ones that give tax breaks to outsourcers or ones for big oil.
Thank you for your question, Mike, very much. Salient issue here in the Granite State. And Josh, back to you, please.
Sure. Let's talk about H-1B visas, rather. New Hampshire tech companies say they're unable to hire skilled workers they need to grow, and many of them support a bill co-sponsored by Senator Ayotte. The bill would expand the H-1B visa program and triple the number of high-skilled foreign workers allowed into the U.S. annually. Critics say, however, that it would lower wages and possibly take jobs away from Americans. Where do you stand on this?
Well, I think there are some strengths in that bill, and I think it's certainly something that we should evaluate closely. But we also have to be growing our high-tech workforce here at home, and that's something I've really focused on as governor, something I want to continue to focus on in the United States Senate. One of the things we know is that we need to have a K-12 education system that focuses on STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math training. And so we have a STEM task force working here in New Hampshire to really promote that kind of education, competency-based education with locally based assessments that really help our young people prepare for high-tech careers. We also know we have to continue to have apprenticeships and partnerships between businesses and community colleges. Again, something we've led on here in New Hampshire, and we can continue to lead on moving forward. It's also critical that we continue to focus on lowering the cost of higher education, and that is something where there's a real difference between me and my opponent in this race as well. We focused in my first budget on freezing in-state tuition at the university system for the first time in 25 years. We've actually lowered tuition at our community colleges. Meanwhile, my opponent voted to make deep cuts into Pell Grants and against allowing students to refinance their student loans, something that would make college more expensive for thousands of Granite State students. So we have to, yes, of course, address the visa issues and bring some more workers into the country. But I think it's really important that we continue to focus on lowering the cost of higher education, making it more relevant, expanding those partnerships between the business community and our own higher education community, and really supporting people to move into those high-tech careers here at home.
But so do you agree that with the Democratic nominee that we should be looking at, you know, free tuition for family at state institutions for people who are earning under $125,000. Do you think that's a good step?
I think the first goal should be debt-free college in public institutions for all of our people. I do agree with Secretary Clinton's plan to work to move towards tuition-free college for those whose families earn under a certain amount, and that again is something that we've been working on in New Hampshire. We obviously have more work to do. But what I hear all the time from people is that the cost of higher education and the fact that they are paying above market interest rates to the federal government are real barriers for their capacity to get the skills they need to move into the workforce. We have high-tech jobs in New Hampshire in advanced manufacturing that are going unfilled. They're really good-paying jobs. And this is one of the things that we have to continue to focus on. One of my great concerns is that not only should we be expanding Pell Grants? That's something that my economic policy calls for. But we should be allowing students in the federal loan program to refinance their student loans, something my opponent has voted against. And again, it's really concerning to me that at a time when making higher education more affordable and more accessible is such a priority, that my opponent hasn't supported those efforts in Washington.
But so on her visa bill, though, you're open to looking at that?
Oh, yeah, obviously, yeah.
Tripling sounds like a lot. Tripling the number of H-1B visas. Workers, whenever we talk about this on our program, The Exchange, we hear from people who say, you know, that's an easy out for businesses. Just import the people, and then they don't have to invest in local people from the Granite State. So tripling to those folks sounds like a lot.
Well, that's why I think it's important to look closely at what the appropriate balance is. But we know we need more workers in the short term. We also know we need to grow our workforce and invest in the kind of opportunity that will allow our young people to learn these skills and be that workforce. We also know that as we work to lower the cost of higher education here in the Granite State and in the United States, we will keep more people in our state available to our companies.
Now, working to lower the cost of higher education here in the Granite State, a lot of the young professionals here may be saying, wow, I haven't seen the fruits of those efforts yet. It just keeps getting more and more expensive here in New Hampshire. So I wonder if those efforts are paying off.
Well, you know, our community college tuition has gone down. We froze tuition at our university system for the first time in 25 years for 2 years in a row and then worked to keep it as low as possible in this last year. We still have more work to do. But, you know, that is a real difference between my opponent and me. And, you know, when you come down to it, I would expand Pell Grants while we're working to lower the cost of tuition. We've also done some things in New Hampshire, like creating a program between the university system and the community college system so people can go for 2 years to the community college system at that lowered tuition and then in certain disciplines be automatically accepted to the university system if they've kept their grade point average up,
right.
And therefore get their bachelor's at a cost that is a combined cost of 2 years of community college and 2 years of UNH. But again, the contrast in this race is really significant. I call for expanding Pell Grants and refinancing federal loans. My opponent voted to make deep cuts into Pell Grants. She actually also had the opportunity to restore Pell Grant funding to a budget, and she voted against that.
Well, we've
and
got then, a different, she's and got then, a different approach and a different philosophy
well,
towards this. So.
Well, but Laura, let's hold on just a second, because that isn't what she says. She's now trying to say that her record isn't what it is. She voted to make deep cuts into Pell Grants. She voted against allowing students to refinance their loans and then offered a sham piece of legislation that's been called a sweetheart deal for Wall Street that would force students who wanted to refinance their loans over to Wall Street with no consumer protections.
Okay.
So that's a real difference, and I think people should know about it.
Well, and we are going to be with you again in October
yeah.
for a debate with Senator
yeah.
Ayotte, and we can flesh out those issues in more detail. I did want to ask you, Governor Hassan, a few questions very quickly, because we got so many questions from our listeners in advance of today's program. Now, we're hoping to get quick answers from you with just yes or no or super short responses. I know that's not always easy, but here we go. We'll do our best here. A little bit of a lightning round with you. UNH researchers have long warned about global warming and its effects on our state. Many environmentalists argue we need a carbon tax in order to really reduce carbon emissions. Do you agree, Governor Hassan? Carbon tax, yes or no?
I support increasing our regional greenhouse gas initiative, which I sponsored here in the state Senate.
So not a fan of a carbon tax.
Well, a cap and trade system is a really good idea, once something we can expand, something that's achievable and a model that's already working in various places around the United States.
A group of Senate Democrats recently unveiled a new push to add a public option to the Affordable Care Act as a way to add more insurance choices, especially in areas where competition is lacking. This is brewing in the U.S. Senate among Democrats, as you know. As a senator, would you support this public option, yes or no?
I think it's more important to build on the progress we've been making, increase competition, and continue to make improvements which are certainly needed to the Affordable Care Act.
So a vote against a public option if you were in the Senate?
I will look at it closely, but I don't think so.
Here's another one from a listener. You talk a lot about balancing the budget. We have a huge national debt. What federal programs would you cut to rein in our national debt?
I certainly would start closing the loopholes for big oil, for outsourcers, and for other special interests. There are also things we can do to strengthen Medicare and Social Security. What I won't do is balance our budget on the backs of our seniors by using cuts to Medicare or Social Security as mechanisms for balancing the budget. We can strengthen those programs and continue to make sure that people who paid into and earned those benefits get those benefits. And that's, again, a real distinction between myself and my opponent.
So no one program or one agency that you would just whack out 100%.
I've laid out in a fiscal responsibility plan a number of things we can take. But, you know, we own a lot of federal buildings that are empty. We should get rid of those. That's one thing we could do.
One last quickie for you. As you know, lots of concern in Congress about the banking industry and less than stellar behavior by some of our nation's big banks. This has once again raised the question, Governor Hassan, the Dodd-Frank bill that came out of the financial crisis. Some people say too tough. Some people say not tough enough. What do you think?
We need to have an economy that works for Main Street, not Wall Street. And I think it's really important to keep Dodd-Frank. There are some improvements and adjustments we could make to it, to be sure. But we also need to make sure that we have a strong Consumer Protection Bureau. And I'm very concerned that my opponent has tried to pull the teeth out of that bureau.
So Dodd-Frank, not tough enough, sounds like.
Dodd-Frank needs some adjustments, and I think, you know, you need to focus on the particulars of Dodd-Frank and where it's working and where it isn't.
Okay. Coming up, we'll turn to police relations with African Americans and the turmoil we've seen in many cities around this. So stay with us for more Conversation with the Candidates here on NHPR. Welcome back to our Conversations with the Candidate series on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy, along with Josh Rogers. Our guest is New Hampshire Governor Maggie Hassan, the Democratic nominee for U.S. Senate. We're taking questions from our live audience from the Young Professionals Networks of Concord, Manchester, and the Lakes Region, as well as those submitted in advance on social media. And Josh, let's start off with a question from you, please.
Sure. Obviously, police-minority relations have been fraught across the country lately. An NHPR analysis of New Hampshire data, local data, shows that black and Latino people in New Hampshire are arrested and jailed at higher rates than whites and at more disproportionate rates than blacks and Latinos nationwide. What, in your estimation, is at the root of this problem in New Hampshire?
Well, first of all, our primary job as government is keeping our state safe and secure, and having a justice system that is truly just and fair to all. And so we work in New Hampshire with our communities and our law enforcement to continue a kind of dialogue and communication to address those very issues. I think it's very clear that overall our criminal justice system has racial disparities, and they are disparities we need to address. I know that the Manchester Police Department, the Nashua Police Department, for instance, have ongoing discussions with the minority communities, and at a state level, we have just begun to convene that kind of discussion with our state-level public safety officials with members of the minority communities, and we'll continue to do that. We have a single police training facility in New Hampshire that all police go to, and that's a real opportunity for us to look at this data, understand what's driving it more, and continue to improve. I am very grateful to the brave men and women of law enforcement throughout the state of New Hampshire who put themselves on the line for us each and every day, often, you know, not knowing whether they're going to come home to their families to keep the rest of us safe. And I know that they want to do their job well. I also know that when a member of law enforcement breaks the law, that they need to be held accountable to the full extent of the law, something you saw recently with an incident where a state trooper used unjustified force.
I mean, that was a relative in Nashua. Is that what you're talking about? I mean, that was obviously an incident that was captured on tape. And, you know, it's been rare. You know, we have the Attorney General's office to look at these incidents. And it's a rarity that there's ever fault found with a member of law enforcement.
Well, I think you're making some big generalizations here. And I think one of the things that is difficult with the current discussion is that while on the one hand we are working very hard and a number of folks have raised the issue of whether there is racial stereotyping and how we might address that, it's also important that we not generalize about law enforcement. And I would need to sit with you and talk to you about which particular incidents you think were issues of alleged bias as opposed to the general investigations into, for instance, police-involved shootings, some of which might involve allegations of bias, some of which do not, but just are investigated as they should be by the Attorney General's office.
So, fair enough. But do you – some people have said, it would be better off if we had, you know, an inspector general position or somebody outside the Attorney General's office looking at this. What's your view on that?
New Hampshire doesn't have an inspector general's office. From time to time, it is suggested. I think you'd have to look at what the cost would be and what the role would be for that inspector general. But I think our Attorney General's office has experience and expertise in this. And I, generally speaking, have seen reports that they've done. And people generally haven't challenged those reports.
While we're talking about public safety, Governor Hassan, I wanted to ask you about guns, with mass shootings becoming a regular headline, including just this weekend where five people were killed at a shopping mall outside Seattle. You've said that you support the right to own guns for personal safety, hunting, and recreation, but those rights must be balanced with public safety. How would you, as a U.S. senator, try to achieve that balance, Governor Hassan? Please be specific.
Sure. Well, I do support the Second Amendment right to responsibly own firearms for the very reasons you just listed, hunting, recreation, defense of one's home. And I think we have a long tradition in New Hampshire of balanced approach here to gun safety. I do think that we should have expanded background checks in this country, something, again, where I differ from my opponent. In the wake of the horror in Orlando, she had the opportunity to vote to expand background checks so terrorists and other people who shouldn't have guns wouldn't be able to buy them online or at gun shows. She has again declined to do that. I would certainly support
That's
expanding
background. That's no buy. That's what people call it.
It actually is, yeah, beyond that, but it's making sure they can't buy them at gun shows and online. And so she has declined to do that. I would support that. I also would support an assault weapon ban.
So you said expand background checks, and you touched on that. But give us a little bit more, Governor Hassan. So this has been a point of tension between Republicans and Democrats.
Right.
You would expand background checks to gun shows and online.
Right. Right now, a known or suspected terrorist who might be prevented from buying a gun at a gun store can still go online or to gun shows and buy guns. And that's what the whole debate about expanding background checks is about. People, we all agree, responsible gun owners agree, that there are some people who shouldn't have access to guns, yet our current background check system allows them to circumvent the whole system by just going to gun shows and online. I don't think we should do that. I think we should expand the background check system. And I think especially around issues of national security, where we now know that terrorists understand how they can circumvent the background check system in the United States. It's a matter of national security, and I would vote to expand background checks, and my opponent has declined to do that.
So what about extending background checks, Governor Hassan, to those with a history of serious mental illness? That has come up in New Hampshire.
Yep.
As you know, some people in this community feel it's an unfair smear on a whole group of Americans.
What is really important is that people who have been adjudicated to be a danger to themselves or others, and that's a very, very small percentage of people who are challenged with mental illness, shouldn't have access to firearms. And I think there has been broad agreement about that. We thought we had agreement to move towards addressing that issue in New Hampshire a couple of years ago. Unfortunately, I think it's fair to say that the gun lobby began to have cold feet about reaching an agreement. But I think it is really important that we address that issue. We need to make sure that we are not stereotyping people with mental illness, most of whom don't pose a danger to themselves or to others. But when there has been an adjudication that they do, I think it's very appropriate that they not have access to firearms.
One more question on this, and then we'll go back to our audience here. Some people feel that the best way to stop a, quote, bad guy with a gun is to have more, quote, good guys with a gun. How do you feel about that, Governor Hassan?
There's no evidence to support the notion that just arming everybody is going to make us more safe. In fact, there is strong evidence to support otherwise. But here's the thing. We have to balance Second Amendment rights with the right of people to be safe. And we know that even when people are highly trained to use firearms, that in times of great tension and great fear and great confusion, they can make mistakes. So I think it's really important to do what we have done in New Hampshire. We have expanded training for law enforcement on active shooters. We have increased training for state employees, for instance, about what to do if there is an active shooter situation. We've also worked with our schools to make sure that we have school safety plans and plans in place for what to do.
So you're not convinced about the good guy with a gun argument.
And we should increase our resources for our law enforcement. We need to have more troopers on the road, something I did do, but we still need to have more. And we need to be working with our law enforcement, and we should keep, you know, again, if we expanded background checks, we would have fewer situations where people who shouldn't have guns have them.
Let's go back to our audience again. Several New Hampshire Young Professionals Networks are here. Next person, good morning. Thanks for being here. Please give us your first name and your question.
Hi, I'm Jessica from Concord.
Hi, Jessica.
Good morning, Governor Hassan, and
thank
you for your service. I work for a nonprofit, the Northern Forest Center, which promotes forest-based community economic development in the New Hampshire North Country and Northern Forest of Maine, Vermont, and New York. Rural communities supply us with food and fiber and energy and open space. They are concerned about an aging population, shrinking household incomes, the departure of young people to urban areas, and poor access to modern infrastructure for broadband. Yet rural places also see opportunity to revitalize and grow entrepreneurship based on quality of life, access to natural resources, and other amenities. How would you support rural communities if elected U.S. Senator for New Hampshire?
Well, thank you very much for the question. And we have, obviously, rural communities throughout New Hampshire, but it seems to me that your question is focused mostly on the North Country. So let me just talk a little bit about what we have focused on in the North Country. First of all, you know, when you travel up there, you do see that wonderful preservation of open space, of our beautiful natural resources, among other things, natural resources that draw visitors from around the globe into a very strong travel and tourism economy that is critical to the North Country. So we have invested in our travel and tourism industry here in New Hampshire, making sure that we're promoting it and drawing those people that are such economic drivers to the North Country. We also have reauthorized and extended our Coos County tax credit for people who start businesses there. And federally, the Northern Border Regional Commission is an entity that critically provides grants, everything from a grant to Friendship House, which is a treatment and recovery center in Bethlehem, to critical investments for improving cell tower cell service generally in the North Country. Those are some of the things that we've done to focus on the North Country, and also, obviously, making sure that we could come together as we did, making the first or the most significant state-level investment in our transportation infrastructure in 23 years. We did that in my first term in a bipartisan way so that we're fixing roads and bridges and highways. There's obviously more to do, but we're seeing the Riverwalk project going on in Berlin, some downtown revitalization in Littleton, and at the same time working to protect our open space and our natural resources up there. And it's something I continue to be committed to doing, and something that you'll also see in my economic plan, Innovate 2.0, is focus on creating more of a clean energy economy. So it's not just about, for instance, extending our regional greenhouse gas initiative program, but it's also about how do you help people invest in a clean energy economy and create those clean energy jobs, as we have done up in Berlin with our biomass plant.
Okay. And Jessica, thank you for the question. Josh Rogers, back to you, please.
Sure, Governor. This next question comes from a listener. What do you say to those voters who say that you're too scripted as a candidate? Is this fair, unfair, or just simply the reality of modern politics?
You know, what I talk about every day is what the people of New Hampshire talk to me about every day. And so I will always try to make sure that I raise their voices and talk about what's important to them. That has included everything from improving our behavioral health system in New Hampshire, something I heard about all the time in my, especially my first run for governor back in 2012, to now the discussions I have with people everywhere I go about the impact of the heroin and opioid crisis on them and their families or in their businesses. So that's what I do, is I talk to people in New Hampshire, and I focus on what's important to them, to the businesses I meet. And, you know, that's what I'll continue to talk about in this campaign. What I hear from people is that they want to have a future again where middle-class families have a shot, where if you're really willing to work really hard, you can get ahead. People want to know that their kids are going to have a better future than they had. And so that's what I focused on as governor. That's what I'll focus on if I'm fortunate enough to win this race for the United States Senate. And I've laid out a number of plans that are very detailed, from the Innovate 2.0 plan, which is my economic plan, to a national security plan, which really focuses on a broad group of steps we can take to strengthen our military, defeat ISIS, strengthen our homeland, continue our global leadership. And laid out plans on any number of other issues as well, which I invite people to take a look at. But what's important, I think, to the people and businesses of New Hampshire is that we continue to do things the New Hampshire way. You focus on the problems or challenges that people have, and you come together to get things done for them, and that's what I'll continue to talk about.
Okay, voters can decide whether that was off the cuff or whether that whole line of argument is meaningful or not. But yeah, I think we're almost out of time, and so I'm just going to shift to a final question. Your campaign with Senator Ayotte has obviously been tough. People from all over the world, seems like, are watching. And I just want to know, are there any policy matters in which you think Senator Ayotte, somebody you want to replace, has done a good job?
You know, we have made really good progress here in New Hampshire, and we've still got more work to do. It's the type of progress we should be making in Washington. What I continue to be concerned about is that Senator Ayotte has a voting record that reflects a commitment to standing with special interests instead of the people of New Hampshire. There are some areas of agreement she and I have. We both oppose the internet sales tax, for instance. When it comes to comprehensive immigration reform, we probably have relatively similar positions, although I'm concerned that she's missed a bunch of her Homeland Security meetings, nearly half of them, that dealt with border security and drug trafficking. But at the end of the day, this is about whether New Hampshire is going to have a senator who's always going to put their priorities first, which is what I've worked to do as governor and I have a record of doing, or a senator who has been continually standing with special interests at the expense of middle-class families. And I think that that's a real distinction in this race. We didn't talk about a number of the other differences, whether it's women's health. I support a woman's right to make her own health care decisions. Senator Ayotte's voted to defund Planned Parenthood 6 times and says Roe v. Wade should be overturned. I've worked to put together a bipartisan Medicaid expansion program. Senator Ayotte's voted to repeal it 5 times. So on a lot of issues, there are real choices here, and I think that it's really important for people to understand that. At the end of the day, this is about how we come together and make an even more inclusive future for our state and our country.
Well, and Governor Hassan, that's all we have time for now, and we've got to wrap it up. This has been our Conversations with the Candidate series, kicking it off today with Governor Maggie Hassan, Democratic nominee for U.S. Senate. Again, we have extended an invitation to incumbent Senator Kelly Ayotte to join us at a future date. I want to thank all the listeners who submitted all those questions. Also, very much thank our live audience from the 3 Young Professionals Networks, and especially to our guest, New Hampshire Governor Maggie Hassan. Governor Hassan, thank you.
Thank you very much for having me. I really enjoyed it. And thanks to all of the audience participants. This was great. Thank you.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.